The two lace pieces in front of you, likely front pieces for church altars, are examples of lace made for the church, but also very possibly made in the church, as a great deal of European lace at this time was made in convents by nuns, and the sale of it helped to keep these convents financially afloat. In this period in Venice, a major center for lace production, most nuns were made nuns against their will. A noble daughter's dowry was so expensive that many fathers opted to marry off most of their daughters to Christ, as it were. This was pretty easy for the father to do, since most adolescent noble girls were sent to boarding schools at convents. If their fathers decided the girls should become nuns instead of marrying other noble men, they'd quite literally often just leave the girls there at the same convent to start their novitiate ceremonies. And many middle and lower class women were also sent to convents to become lay sisters, frequently forced to act as unofficial servants of the higher class choir sisters. And there at the convent, according to the official rules at least, all of these women entered a life of self-denial, made vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, had little to no access to the outside world, and worked only for the good of their communities. And yet, scholarship shows that convent life at this time was anything but simple. On the one hand, you had many strict and oppressive rules being imposed from without upon the lives of these nuns, but on the other, you have a million ways the nuns broke these rules. Maybe you're hearing in this music playing a weighty ecclesiastical denial of the self and the body. But maybe there's something else to be heard in it and to be seen in this lace. The beating heart of each nun, their individual ways of skirting authority, their daily struggles. For instance, these nuns often took lovers from both outside the convent and within it. They put on lewd plays. They wrote forbidden treatises railing against the whole convent system, like those written by one head lace maker, Suor Arcangela Terabotti. They also sometimes dressed up like wealthy men and women and had dance parties at midnight. They played cards and dice for money. They oppressed each other through interconvent social and economic hierarchies. They made lavish lace gifts for people outside the convents in order to obtain political power, or made gifts of lace to friars within the church who were sometimes their gambling buddies or even lovers. They stayed up all night finishing complex lace commissions for foreign ambassadors. They snuck out during Carnival or snuck friends in to drink and party with them. Some ratted each other out for this behavior, some defended each other for it, and some, of course, diligently tried to commune with the divine in ways that frightened the male church authorities. So as you look at these altar fronts here, I ask you to try and feel some of this ambiguity. On the one hand, a lace altar front for a church could seem like a simple, solemn gift. And yet, the altar is the site of communion, the pouring of the wine and the Holy Eucharist, which is to say it's the place where, symbolically, at each daily mass, the delicate body of the nun's husband, Christ, is broken and then placed softly upon each of their tongues. And as made clear by the writings of some mystic nuns, like Agnes Blanbekin of Vienna, this moment was not without possible sexual charge. Is a lace altar front like these here, then, a simple, obedient work by respectful nuns? Is it the result of a harsh textile workshop of imprisoned women? Is it a radical work by renegade artists who refused to be silenced? Is it the bedskirt made by fervent lovers for the sight of their conjugal union? Or all of these things, woven deftly and seamlessly together?